Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, and we are streaming live from Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook. Download their app today and use promo code THEGAME. D-Mace is out today. He's in his Cornhole Championship. We are very proud of him. So we are replacing D-Mace with C-Mace. Chris Mason joins us now. C-Mace,
and I will say, C-Mace is a very good cornhole player himself.
Ah, all the Masons are good at cornhole.
C-Mace, are you jealous? D-Mace is on ESPN2 tonight in Canton, Ohio, throwing the bags. He's doing the cornhole tournament. This is huge.
I'm major jelly right now. I might have to tune in to watch the technique there, because that's big time.
6 o'clock, ESPN2. D-Mace getting back at it.
I have bags going on. That's awesome.
Putting the pads back on.
I will say, C-Mace and I have partnered up in many a city and won many games in cornhole.
There's very few in the L column.
Yeah, and whoever you beat, you should not ever let them forget it. Don't ever let them let it down.
Absolutely, right? Let that win just – that win's going to be infinite.
Infinite, absolutely. Unlike Tennessee's wins. Chris Mason.
Just been making
Too soon. Chris Mason, appreciate you for joining us. I was reading Joe Rexroad's article in The Athletic, kind of highlighting the new moves. And look, I get it. I see Barry Trotz's vision. But there are very fair questions to bring up about what this team looks like at the end of the 3 to 4 year retrotzification, as we are now calling it. So what is your impression of the signings that Barry Trotz brought in, Ryan O'Reilly, Gus Nyquist, and Luke Shen, and what this team's going to look like over the next 3 to 4 years?
Well, I love the signings. You know, if you ask anyone in the hockey world about, you know, all three of those guys, every single person you ask will just praise about their character, what type of teammate they are, and you know, the type of leadership that they bring to the table. And I think it's extremely important when you have, or you're going into a phase where you're going to have a young core or nucleus of players that is going to be your future, and that's kind of who you're building around. It's extremely important. I can't even overstate how important that is, because I've been on both spectrums of it as a young guy with a good core of leadership and players, and then just guys are, hey, I'm happy to be making money. I'm happy to be in the NHL. We win. I don't care. I still get paid the same amount. And the effect that it can have on a young player is just astronomical. So the fact that he brought in these guys that have won, that are high character, that are really going to mentor these players, that's who they look up to. When they come, they walk in the dressing room, and the leadership group, the effort, the way they conduct themselves, the attitude, the mindset, you know, of players that have won and players that are, you know, have had big roles in why their teams have won is just, these players are going to learn so much. And, you know, at the end of that, whatever, 3, 4, 5 years of the trotsification, as you said, you're going to have a lot of these young players saying, man, you know, Ryan O'Reilly was a big influence on me. Ryan McDonough, you know, Luke Shen really helped me understand, you know, when you get into these situations. I just can't overstate. I know people are look at the age of some of these players and say, well, why did you do that? You just got rid of old player. You know, he did this. Well, it's the character and also the fact that these guys are still getting it done on the ice as well. So I think these guys are going to have major impacts on the young players that end up making the team this season and beyond.
Mace, one thing that Joe asked in his article, and I think it's a good question, and the gamble for Barry Trotz in doing this, let's say the team is a scrappy bubble team this year, and you hope that you're growing it from there. But his question is, in 2 or 3 years, when Roman Josi is 34 and 35, and then Philip Forsberg's getting into his low 30s, and Ryan O'Reilly's getting 33, 34, Ryan McDonough is going to be past his mid-30s, can those guys still do what they're doing today when the young guys are hopefully getting into their prime? I think that's really where the rubber is going to meet the road.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's going to be, you know, a wait and see kind of a thing. And players that, as you go along, you know, may have value. If it's not the case, they may have value in trade to acquire assets and to get, you know, other pieces in here that are, you know, align with the direction that the Predators are going to go if they want to get younger. But if they are able to get it done and the younger players develop as well, then I think you're sitting pretty. Then I think you're in a position where, you know, you can add. You might, you know, there's going to be a lot of personnel changeover from, you know, here to 4 years, I'm assuming. You know, and a lot of the big question in the offseason was, oh, who's going to get traded? Is it going to be Saros? Is it going to be Askarov? That's another thing that's, you know, in that time frame, you know, when Saros' new contract, that's probably going to be addressed at some point. And both those guys, you know, have the opportunity to bring huge return back to the Predators. And that's, you know, obviously to be determined. But I think it's so hard to look. It's so hard to look from even right now to the start of this season to even how it's going to look at the end of this season, let alone 4 or 5 years. But obviously there's a plan and there's a vision here. But a lot of those players that you mentioned, you know, if they're not, or if the team isn't developing or going along the path of the rebuild as fast as they want, a lot of those players could probably bring some pretty good value back to the team in order to kind of revamp or kickstart that rebuild.
And I'm glad that you bring up Saros and Askarov. Chris Mason is with us. Because I think that Barry Trotz finds himself in the biggest and best conundrum here with two really solid goaltenders running it back with Juuse Saros this year. But there is going to come a time where Barry Trotz is going to have to make his mind up. Saros, Askarov. Saros is probably going to be dealt a pretty solid contract here in a couple of years once his contract is up. So how do you see this goalie situation playing out between Saros and Askarov, knowing that Askarov is probably chomping at the bit to get his opportunity?
He is, and you're right. It's a fantastic situation to be in because you have right now a proven one of the best goaltenders, one of the top three goalies in the world already in Juuse Saros at an unbelievable bargain right now with the contract he's on. Yes, he's probably going to you know, ask for a lot more and get a lot more, but you know, who knows? You could eventually, given the situation, you know, get the hometown discount as a lot of players have done here, but you know, and then you have the best goalie prospect maybe in the world also. A lot of people say generational talent and all those types of things. Had an excellent year in Milwaukee, but you know, again, he's an unproven guy in the National Hockey League, but he could help a lot of teams and he could bring a very good return. So I think a lot of it's going to have to do with this next year. Obviously, Lankanen on a one-year deal, I would expect the year after that or maybe later in this year, depending how things go, to see more of Askarov getting some NHL experience. And then the closer they get to Saros and an extension or a new contract there, that's, I think, when the decision's going to be made. But either way, you know, if you're trading, I mean, Juuse Saros could, you know, hands down, single-handedly help win, you know, a championship for a team that's ready to compete. But at the same time, if this rebuild goes, you know, quicker than or as according to plan, you have a Juuse Saros who could help you win a championship. And then if not, you got the guy waiting in the wings that, you know, everybody believes is going to be a superstar in this league and in Askarov. So that's a big-time TBD transaction right there.
Chris Mason is with us. We're talking Preds offseason here the day after the Predators introduced Ryan O'Reilly. So on O'Reilly, we just had a great text on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Kind of an ask C-Mace. Instead of usually on Friday we ask D-Mace, but I, you know, why not? Here we are on
why
Friday.
Not?
If you got a question for C-Mace, text
spot.
It in.
Oh, he's going to try to win a cornhole championship.
Yeah. So. Thank you for that.
But he said, this is Clay that texted it. Listen to O'Reilly talk reminds me of Mike Fisher, and that makes me feel really good about him being here. Do you see that connection? Mace, I kind of feel that same thing when I watch Ryan O'Reilly play and I watch him go about his business.
Well, I do because I feel like those guys, you know, everyone has different strengths and attributes they bring. Not everybody's, you know, a vocal leader. Not everybody wants to be rallied around. There's some players that, you know, lead in different ways, whether it's just, you know, hard work, coming to the rink, you know, not a very vocal guy. I want to kind of be a support, you know, to the leadership group. And some guys want to be the mentor. They want to be the father figure. They embrace that. That's who they are. You know, that's in their DNA. And he's one of these players. He embraces that. I think that he takes pride in the fact, like Mike Fisher, I got to play with him and to see firsthand, you know, what that entails, those types of players. And it's really, you know, reaching out to younger players, communicating, embracing that extra part of your responsibility as a leader on the team. As I mentioned, some guys are going to lead in different ways. You know, they're going to come, and when it's, you know, maybe time to speak up, they'll speak up, you know, in certain team meetings and all that kind of stuff, and guys listen to that. But there's also the guys like a Mike Fisher who's going to, you know, maybe be in the wing and see, you know, there's a young guy over there. He's going through a tough time. The coach just yelled at him for turning the puck over in the last minute of the game, and he got scored in. Well, after that meeting, he's going to walk over there. He's going to say, you know, Luke, come over here. You know, I'll talk to you. He's like, hey, I've done that a million times. Don't worry about it. This is what we got to do. And, you know, kind of build the guy back up. And, you know, it's guys like that that are so instrumental on the journey of a young player's development. So the way that he speaks, and obviously you compare him to Mike Fisher, and, you know, that's never a bad thing with those qualities and characteristics. So it's something I think this team really needs.
Brian texts in and says, can we please not let Askarov fight anymore? But that's an interesting thought. But I do have a question on that. You know, Mace, when you're young, when you're his age, you don't have the wisdom that you have when you're, say, 28, 30 years old. He's going to learn a lot. But I'm sure, in his mind, it would be easy for him to say, man, you're about to trade me to a team that's ready to maybe have me be the man a lot sooner. Right now, when am I going to play? You know, how do you try, as you're the Predators, maybe Ben Vanderklok or the surrounding people, to try to make sure that they sell him on, look, you've got a lot to learn, but look, we value you. You're on a great path here, but take advantage of the time here. This is the best thing for you at this point. Because I think it's easy when you're 20 to say, look, I just had a great year in the AHL. I'm ready.
Absolutely. You know, that's one of the things. And I remember when I was talking about this, the first thing he said when he got drafted, he said, I want to be a star. I don't just want to play in the NHL. I want to be a superstar. And I love that attitude. And he's got that special charisma and confidence and that drive to be the best. But I think, you know, especially in this organization, you point out guys that have, you know, he's following in their footsteps. And look at the careers that Pecorine had. Obviously, he was a little bit older by the time he got to the AHL. But UC Saros, you know, he had time in Milwaukee. He came up, you know, he played a support role, obviously. You know, Saros was ready to start a lot sooner than he did, but Pekka was still here, and you know that transition was tough at times. And but you point out to these guys, and then I would look at other guys that, you know, came to the NHL too early. You know, Carter Hart, he's a great goalie now, but he had some big time struggles, and I think it would have been a lot more beneficial, you know, for him to get more seasoning in the American League and just get to that point where, you know, you're dominating and you're the best. It's one season. Milwaukee had a good team. He had a good year. Cooley had a good year. He needs a little more time. And I think the maturity thing, as you pointed out, that's the other thing that's hard to tell a 21-year-old, because we were all there and we all knew everything.
Right.
But, right? You know, it's just the way it is. But I just think you just be patient. He is going to be there and he's going to have a long, illustrious NHL career. And, you know, if you can just hold on and just keep, you know, good attitude and get better, you have a good opportunity to get a lot better. You know, you're going to go to the NHL and you think you're going to be a starter at 21. I don't think that's, you know, necessarily, you know, a reasonable expectation. Very few guys have done it, and especially not a lot have done it with great success. So there's a lot of examples of guys ahead of them, a lot in our organization that I think could kind of, you know, make them just be a little more patient here and just keep going and keep dominating down there.
Last text that I wanted to run by you quickly, C-Mace. I like Barry Trotz's vision. I see it. But I understand that there's a group of Predators fans out there that don't believe in the vision, that don't see the vision. One texter texts in, says, how are we going to win games without scoring?
Well, you're not going to win a game without scoring.
Right, so it's not a bad question.
But I get the question.
But,
like,
yeah.
I hear this a lot, Mace. Mm-hmm. Do they have enough offense as you see the lineup? Can they get enough by committee?
Well, that's the question, and that's something, you know, I get the concern, but how do we know we can't score? We got a lot of, you know, young offensive talent. We've got guys that have scored. We have, Andrew Burnett as a coach is going to really tactically try to – get this team moving, you know, being a lot more aggressive offensively. We've got really good offensive defensemen. We've got one of the best, you know, I think, D-cores right now. Going Roman Josi. I think Philip Forsberg is going to be absolutely huge for this team. He's got to score. He should be, in my opinion, a perennial 40-goal scorer. He's got the talent. He's got to find a way to stay healthy. Got to get a good line combination going with him. A power play has got to be something that is improved this year and more consistent. That's where a lot of offense comes for a lot of teams. And these young players, that's my biggest thing, is these young players finished so strong last year, but it's going to be different this year. You know, we had a lot of offensive success, more than I think anybody thought of these young players, but it's going to be harder. They're going to have a lot of these expectations right off the start of the season. People know who they are. Can they do it now when they're expected to win, when other teams, they're not going to sneak up on teams anymore like we did at the end of last season. So I don't know if there's going to be scoring. That's something we won't know until the season starts, and to see, you know, what the roster looks like at a training camp, if there's any more moves made. I think I actually like that Gurianov signing. I think that's you know, a no-lose situation. Bring the kid in for 1 year. He's got, you know, a lot of offensive upside, played really well in Dallas. You got nothing to lose. If it doesn't work out, you know, you're not going to be too worried if you lose him in waivers in that kind of a situation. So I don't know if we can score yet. That's my long answer for a short answer.
Little Friday Ask C. Mace edition. Chris Mason, we appreciate you. You are the very best. We'll chat with you soon.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
And let's challenge C. Mace. We're going to challenge D. Mace and the partner of his choice, maybe Caroline, to a game.
Let's do it.
I accept.
Yeah.
All right. That's coming up.
Wins,
maybe
is he going to put his belts on? If he wins tonight, is he going to put the belts on the line?
Yeah, he's got to bring a belt home.
I think that we should. It's only right. Yeah. It is only
okay,
right.
Okay, let's do it. We got to stream it, too.
Oh, but this is a big production. This is going to be big.
Or should we get it on D-Mace's network on ESPN2? Because this might be a bigger deal than the one that D-Mace isn't competing in tonight.
Forget the streaming. Let's get on the big let's get on the big mothership.
Big picture.
Let's have our people talk to his people. We'll get this done.
Exactly. Right. Yeah, we'll get it coordinated. C-Mace, appreciate you. Thank you for your time. Have a good one. Have a good weekend.
You awesome. Too. Take care.
Chris Mason, he is the very best. We'll react to what he had to say coming up next. And, of course, your thoughts as well. 615-737-1025. Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace is brought to you by the new Zen Sports Sportsbook, the only sportsbook in Tennessee with a cash rewards program. Betting just got better. Download their app today.
Do they have enough offense as you see the lineup? Can they get enough by committee?
Well, that's the question, and that's something, you know, I get the concern, but how do we know we can't score? We got a lot of, you know, young offensive talent. We've got guys that have scored. We have a, you know, Andrew Burnett as a coach is going to really tactically try to get this team moving, you know, being a lot more aggressive offensively. We've got really good offensive defensemen. We've got one of the best, you know, I think, D-cores right now. Going Roman Josi. I think Philip Forsberg is going to be absolutely huge for this team. He's got to score. He should be, in my opinion, a perennial 40-goal scorer. He's got the talent. He's got to find a way to stay healthy. Got to get a good line combination going with him. A power play has got to be something that is improved this year and more consistent. That's where a lot of offense comes for a lot of teams. And these young players, that's my biggest thing, is these young players finished so strong last year, but it's going to be different this year. You know, we had a lot of offensive success, more than I think anybody thought of these young players, but it's going to be harder. They're going to have a lot of these expectations right off the start of the season. People know who they are. Can they do it now when they're expected to win, when other teams, they're not going to sneak up on teams anymore like we did at the end of last season. So
there you go. That was Chris Mason. Appreciate him for joining us in the last segment. He was responding to a text in our text line about, hey, how are we going to win that many games if we don't score? And that is a question that I think we all have, is where's the offensive firepower coming from? But let's not forget, I don't really think that there is that one go-to guy, your go-to scorer, pre-trotsification. So not having that post-trotsification, especially, and I'm saying that word so seriously, like it's a real word, like it has a real definition, post-trotsification with the vision of, hey, be patient with us. This is a 3 to 4 year plan. I can feel more comfortable with that, with this new vision of wanting the young guys to get more reps, of this being a very, you know, young guy-centric kind of team than it was this past year pre-trade deadline when you didn't have that go-to score, when you were trying to win, when you were pushing for the playoffs.
I think that's really the point, is last year's team struggled to score. Now, what's weird is 2 years ago, it all sort of did come together offensively. They sagged at the end of the year, but for a good portion of the year, they were one of the more, and remember, more goals were being scored in the league, so scoring in general was up as compared to some other years where it seemed like it was very, very difficult across the league to score. But that 1 year where Duchesne and Forsberg set the record for goals in a season, and Johansson had a bounce-back season, and Granlund had a good year, and Josi was almost at 100 points. You know, that team didn't really struggle to score. That team got a lot of offense. Now, they sagged at the end, and then Saros got hurt, and they got blown away in the playoffs. So that kind of got lost a little bit, the fun that they were having for about the first three quarters of the season. So that team, I don't think, would be under the category of struggled to score. But that same group that they ran it back with and added Niederreiter, that you thought on paper, hey, you know, this team could be pretty balanced. They really struggled to score, right? Because Duchesne didn't have a good year. Forsberg didn't have a great year. And then he got, missed almost the entire second half of the year. He got hurt in the first or second game after the All-Star break and then didn't play again. Mm-hmm. Josi still had a dynamite year. But then we know all of the other things. Granlund dropped off. They didn't get any goals from the blue line other than Josi, right? That was a dried up area where in past years the defensemen were very good at adding offense.
Tanner Jeannot
traditionally
couldn't repeat what he did.
Dropped off huge.
Yeah.
So it's all different. So they had to shake it up. It's different. May said it. It all starts, I think, with the guys that you're counting on. That's Josi, who's been pretty reliable, and then Forsberg, who we know is going to get, you know, he's going to get some goals. He's going to score some, but are you going to get the 20, 25 goal Forsberg, 27 goals, but miss 15 or 20 games? Or are you going to get the full Forsberg where he has an excellent year, where it's 35 or 40 goals and more domination? Who does he play with? Mace brought that up. That's a great question. Who are the right guys? Is it O'Reilly? How's the chemistry going to be between those two? We don't know. They've never played together. Something you're going to have to figure out pretty quick in training camp. Is it Parsonen? You know, is it Tommy Novak? Is it Cody Glass? You know, there's a lot of options. So that's got to sort itself out. Who do you put around Forsberg that gives him the best chance to be that game breaker? I think it's going to have to be by committee some. If I look at those first three lines, I don't see a dominant first line. But I see three lines that I think if everybody pulls their weight, you could get enough. And then Mace mentioned the other huge part of it. They had a brutal power play last year.
Brutal.
They had an excellent power play the year before. If they have a good power play, that is a way that you get enough goals to win. And you hope that you don't have to have a top 10 scoring team to win a lot because you've got number 76 back there.
Never hurts.
He gives you a chance.
It never hurts. And that's what I want to get into coming up next, because we've talked a lot about how Barry Trotz is going to kind of manage the two.
I should say 74. I'm thinking 76 is PK. 74 is Saros. I got my 70s.
Having PK also does help.
And I'm also holding a quarter, and you can look, Caroline, from 1976. It happened to be in our studio. It was like somebody left a bicentennial quarter here. I remember when I was a kid, these were like gold.
Vintage.
It's vintage, man. Like, isn't this?
My dad has.
If you're
one
a coin
those.
Collector, this should be in like a folder somewhere, right?
Yeah, my dad's got one of those folders that you have like from certain areas, and they're all from the same year. I'm like, yeah, that's pretty neat.
You're rich.
Yeah.
You can
and also
toss
like
that into
this
Tennessee
is also
football,
like this is a good game of Miss Pac-Man right here back in the day.
Get yourself a gumball.
Flashing back. Yeah. Now does it even get you a gumball?
They're probably 50 cents at this point.
Yeah, gumballs are too expensive.
Yeah, inflation. You know, and it's really hit the gumball market. But that's what I want to get into coming up next, is how Barry Trotz – we've been talking a lot about how Barry Trotz manages Saros and Askarov. But what about how they manage just Askarov himself? And we will explain that coming up next. Caroline Willie D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
You know, that's one of the things. And I remember when I was talking about this, the first thing he said when he got drafted is, I want to be a star. I don't just want to play in the NHL. I want to be a superstar. And I love that attitude. And he's got that special charisma and confidence and that drive to be the best. But I think, you know, especially in this organization, you point out guys that have, you know, he's following in their footsteps. And look at the careers that Pecorine had. Obviously, he was a little bit older by the time he got to the NHL, but you see Saros.
There you go. That was Chris Mason on with us earlier in the show. Appreciate Chris Mason for joining us. But we've talked a lot about, and especially before the draft, before the Trotsification has taken place, was what's Barry Trotz going to do with UC Saros? How is he going to balance UC Saros and Yaroslav Askarov, who is looking like he's getting more and more ready for the big leagues as days go on? But there was an article that you sent me earlier this morning, Willie, on Yahoo.com that's ranking the best and worst prospect pools in the NHL. The Predators sit at number 13, and Yaroslav Askarov is one player that they mention in the Predators prospect pool, which I don't think you can mention the Preds prospect pool without mentioning Askarov. But some interesting tea in this article. It says there's a feeling around the NHL that Yaroslav Askarov, considered one of the best netminding prospects to emerge in the last decade, could be growing tired of waiting for his turn in net. If that's the case, they need to play him or move him. So you have a little bit more insight as to, like, exactly what does that mean?
Yeah, I was surprised to see this, honestly. Ian Kennedy is a contributing writer for, this is the Canadian Yahoo Sports, right? So a friend of mine sent this to me, and I went to Yahoo. I was like, where is this? And I noticed it was ca.sports.yahoo.com.
There we go.
And you get into their NHL thing. And it's a really interesting prospect ranking. They have the Predators at number 13. You know, that's a pretty solid ranking. That's about in line with what I've seen other places. Yeah, I've seen them a little bit higher in some, a little bit lower in others. But I think it's clear that they feel pretty good about their prospect pool. And Askarov is either one or two on their list of prospects right now. And that's not counting guys like Evangelista and Glass and Novak and guys that are now up with the Predators.
At what time do they become just not prospects?
You kind of graduate up right into NHL player and right, not players on the way up. Kemmel is a really interesting one. But that little note about Askarov did have me going, where's he getting that? Is that just purely opinion? Yaroslav Askarov did switch agents a few months ago. And so, you know, is that the kind of thing an agent behind the scenes starts swirling? Hey, you know, we know that there was that big trade talk. That was a big league story at the draft in Nashville that they were dangling Askarov. So I can certainly see a young player like Askarov saying, hey, man, I'm ready. I'm ready. It's like Luke Skywalker in Star Wars, right? He was ready. And Ben Obi-Wan Kenobi was saying, you need more training. You're not done with the training yet. Yoda, you're not done with the training yet. And I think it's hard to sell that sometimes to a young player that, hey, especially as a goalie, the slow track is the best track. When you come up, we want you to be totally ready to dominate. He's got the tools to dominate, but he does have a lot to learn. And you can just go by the one game he played in the NHL last year. I would love for people, if you didn't see that game, go back and watch that game if you have a chance to do it, because you saw some showcase of some amazing things that he can do, but also some big, big mistakes that were probably avoidable if he were just a little more polished and refined. So that's where he's got to get to. But that did kind of intrigue me. But it does kind of bring up the discussion. I think, as Mace was saying, it's going to take good management. Remember, Pecorine is in the fold now as sort of an ambassador and a guy working with goalie prospects.
Right.
You've got one of the best goalie coaches out there in Ben Vanderklok. Don't forget, too, you've got the all-time Yoda of goalies and Mitch Korn that Barry Trotz has always had around. And I don't know what his official role is going to be, but I would imagine somewhere out in the Ethernet, you know, you've got the wisdom of Mitch Korn. And, of course, Ben Vanderklok learned under Mitch. So you've got a lot of good people surrounding. You've got Mace there, right? You've got a lot of people. And, of course, you've got UC Saros.
Right.
Really good mentors that can help show him the way. But I do think driving home the patience with him will be important, because I think there will be outside people and maybe just deep down a confident, brash young goalie like a Skarov is going to be fighting to say, I'm ready. I'm get me in there. I want to play. So how do you manage that? I think it's going to take some massaging, right?
Absolutely, 100%. And at what point do you say, all right, come on. You're playing tonight. Come on up. And I think almost in the weirdest way, the best thing for him or for the goalie management right now is maybe he gets knocked down a few pegs. Maybe he doesn't have a great game. And it's, look, we gave you the opportunity. We're telling you, just let yourself cook a little bit longer. Let yourself get a little bit more experience. Or he's absolutely dynamite. And then you're like, okay, cool. We've got one of the best goaltenders in the league. And we've got another one coming right up. That's a great problem to have. But this little tidbit in this article on Canadian Yahoo Sports kind of makes me laugh a little bit. It says that Askarov could be growing tired of his waiting for his turn in net. I get it. If that's the case, they need to play him or move him. Or what?
Yeah.
Like, or what's going to happen?
Can't go anywhere.
Yeah, like, okay.
I guess he could go back to Russia. I mean, that's the nightmare, right? Is that did happen years ago with Alexander Radulov, and it wasn't because he wasn't playing, but I guess as a Russian player, that is always an underlying worry. Is like, he could go back to the KHL, and there's, you know, if that happens, what are you supposed to do? It doesn't really happen as much as it did when the KHL was brand new.
Mm-hmm.
And Askarov, I do think, ultimately has the vision. He wants to be a great goalie in the greatest league in the world. I hope that continues there. So that's,
you'd think
you'd have to really be a worrywart to go to that place in your mind, but I do think it is something to watch for. They're going to have to work on it. And Askarov, he had a great year by all accounts last year. Learned a lot, played really well as basically the youngest goalie in that league, in the AHL. So I still think there's a lot for him to learn. But I think once you've sort of conquered that league to a degree, mm-hmm. you are kind of saying, okay, what's my pathway? How long am I going to have to wait? 2 more years? I don't want to do that. Right? So you do wonder if he's going to want a taste. And can they find a way to get him a couple of games mm-hmm. this year just to see what he looks like up there? Maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. And I get it. I get the antsiness, especially with what I've heard his demeanor and his personality is very, you know, strong, kind of alpha male kind of personality. I get it. He wants to prove himself. I understand. This feels like a little bit of agent speak to me. If you don't play him, you need to move him or else. Or else what?
And what's the offer, right?
Right, yeah.
Because I do think if they did dangle him out in a trade, other teams are going to like, well, you dangled him out during the draft.
Yeah.
What would it take to get him now? Like, that will be revisited probably at some point, because I think it's logical when you have Soros and Askarov. You know, if you were betting a futures bet mm-hmm. that one of them would get traded in the next couple of years,
which is probably more
decent shot, right?
Yeah,
decent
shot. Absolutely. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Now, Askarov is the future. What about now? What does the national media view about what the Predators can be now in this upcoming season? We'll get into that coming up next, and of course, your thoughts as well. Caroline Willie DeMays is brought to you by the News and Sports Sportsbook. It is the only sportsbook in Tennessee with a cash rewards program. Betting just got better. Download their app today. 1025-1063 The Game. Get back with Uzi Soros this year, but there is going to come a time where Barry Trotz is going to have to make his mind up. Soros, Askarov. Soros is probably going to be dealt a pretty solid contract here in a couple of years once his contract is up. So how do you see this goalie situation playing out between Soros and Askarov, knowing that Askarov is probably chomping at the bit to get his opportunity?
He is, and you're right. It's a fantastic situation to be in, because you have right now a proven one of the best goaltenders, one of the top three goalies in the world already in UC Soros at an unbelievable bargain right now with the contract he's on. Yes, he's probably going to, ask for a lot more and get a lot more, but, you know, who knows? You could eventually, given the situation, you know, get the hometown discount, as a lot of players have done here. But, you know, and then you have the best goalie prospect maybe in the world also. A lot of people say generational talent and all those types of things. Had an excellent year in Milwaukee. But, you know, again, he's an unproven guy in the National Hockey League. But he could help a lot of teams, and he could bring a very good return. So I think a lot of it's going to have to do with this next year. Obviously, Lankinen on a one-year deal, I would expect the year after that or maybe later in this year, depending how things go, to see more of Askarov getting some NHL experience. And then the closer they get to Saros and an extension or a new contract there, that's, I think, when the decision's going to be made. But either way, you know, if you're trading, I mean, UC Saros could, you know, hands down, single-handedly help win, you know, a championship for a team that's ready to compete. But at the same time, if this rebuild goes, you know, quicker than or as according to plan, you have a UC Saros who could help you win a championship. And then if not, you got the guy waiting in the wings that, you know, everybody believes is going to be a superstar in this league and in Askarov. So,
hey, that was Chris Mason on Askarov, and we have a bunch of texts in our text line on Yaroslav Askarov, so let's get into those. Again, a breakdown on Yahoo Sports Canada about the rankings of the best prospect pools in the NHL. The Predators come in at number 13, and in this article, there's a little tidbit that says Askarov is getting a little antsy, that he wants his opportunity. Either play him or move him or else. Let's get into some of your thoughts on that. Our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. One texter says, Askarov still needs time in Milwaukee. He could not finish the postseason stretch. That would be a wake-up call to him to be in better shape for this fall and maybe join the Predators as a backup if need be until Lankinen is out.
Lankinen has got a one-year contract that he signed last year right at the trade deadline. That surprised some people, but Lankinen had, as we know, a really good bounce-back season. What surprised me about him signing at that time is I thought he might test the market and see if somebody out around the league would take a shot at him as being their starter, like a 1A, 1B, mm-hmm. where he could play more and not be a clear backup to Saros. But, man, he was the quintessential backup goalie last year. Played really well when they asked him to play. And when you're the backup goalie, sometimes you get the really difficult starts, that back end of a back-to-back on the road, sometimes against a really tough team. And he had some great wins under those circumstances. He stole some games. And he also sets the example. But it's a one-year deal. So I think Askarov, this is the year where him being the number three, are there creative ways, or maybe the opportunity will just present itself with an injury or something where he can come up and get a taste of it, play a few more games. Think about how long it took UC Saros to become the starter. Think about how long it took Pekka Rinne to become the starter. Pekka Rinne didn't win more than a handful of games until he was about 27 years old. He spent like three full years in Milwaukee sort of marinating. Askarov is so far ahead of the curve on that. It's going to be a different pathway, but he is going to have to be patient. And so that'll be tricky. I don't know. A lot of the fans are really excited to see what he would look like in a Predators uniform because totally. He's entertaining. He's an entertaining player.
Like one texter, Neely, says, please, please don't trade Askarov. I am so excited to see him play for the Predators. He's so electrifying and invigorating. I think he could add a ton of excitement and energy to our fan base during this post-rebuilding period we seem to be going into. I don't think that's on the table right now. I mean, Barry Trotz said he had an uncomfortable offer to move up into the top three in the draft, including Askarov. So if that isn't even on the table to trade Askarov, it would have to be a juicy, juicy return, something that would be of equal value or even more value of a top three pick in this year's draft with some of the top prospects that the league has seen in a long time. So I don't think it's going to happen, and if it does, it's going to be worth something really, really good.
Yeah, and if it's not...
Don't stress. It's going to be okay.
Right, because there's nothing but good outcomes out there. You know, when the time... Let's say it's in 2 years and you feel like Askarov is a blossoming superstar and you move on from Saros, well, then you have a relatively inexpensive goalie you think you can win with, and you have more resources to address the team in front of him. You could go that route. You could keep Saros, and you could trade Askarov, who in another year or two, hopefully his prospect status is going to rise because people will see him if he continues on this path. And then you get a lot of assets back for him. That's a good thing. Or scenario three is you keep them both, and you have a tremendous 1-2 punch for a couple of years, and you put it off down the road. But that's what you had with Rene and Saros for a number of years.
Worked out pretty well.
Yeah. I'm not even sure people realize how good. Saros was not as hyped up as Askarov because he wasn't a first-round pick. You know, he kind of snuck up on you. He had these prolific numbers in Milwaukee, but just steadily, as he played more and more, at first, like, boy, this undersized guy, he looks pretty good. Man, he's playing some good games. But every year he would play more, and at the end of the year he'd look at his stats, .920 save percentage. Man, this guy is unbelievable. But he was still sort of playing in the shadow of Rene for a long time.
So I think that would be best
like,
case scenario.
An apprenticeship under Saros for Askarov where he could kind of play those 20-25 games for a year or two,
it
it's a great stair-stepping into a bigger role.
Absolutely.
But again, he's going to have to be patient with that.
Which, according to this Yahoo.com article, and I don't know what the source is, to me it sounds like it's coming from the agent. The patience is running thin, but what can you do to just throw him a little bit of a bone? That it is keeping him in a comfortable enough place where he is in Milwaukee, and also you're not sacrificing his growth, you're not sacrificing your plan and what you want to do while giving him some of that experience, letting him dip his toes into the water to really realize where he kind of ranks among the NHL ranks, and then you move on from there.
Yep. Got a couple other quick texts on this.
Yeah.
What are the chances we see a Pex and Juice tandem between Saros and Askarov? Well, that's what we just kind of laid out.
Right.
Very possible. It has worked in the past. And if Askarov is willing to do that, that was the beauty of Saros. Never opened his mouth and said, you know, I feel like I should be playing more.
Yeah.
You know, they had such a respect for one another, Saros and Rene, that never became a thing. And then towards the end, it did become a difficult choice for John Hines. You had an aging Pekka Rinne and a Juuse Saros that became the better goalie at one point. You know, when, you know, I don't know if there was a specific day that it happened, but remember in the bubble, mm-hmm. they chose to play Saros over Rinne in the playoff series. And then the following year, it became Saros that sort of carried the load, Pekka's final year. So I don't know that that's going to happen anytime soon because Saros is still pretty young.
Yeah.
But that's way, way down the road. But you had 4 or 5 years in there where it was a tremendous mentor and then the understudy. And you got great combination of goaltending between the two. So the last one is trade Askarov. I don't think his personality will allow for the teamwork aspect like Rene Saros type team. Askarov's personality is definitely different.
And how much of it is he's a baby. And
yeah.
He's got a whole lot of growing up to do. And he's got a whole lot of coming back to earth to do. Sometimes your personality is just your personality, and he's got a strong, I don't know what other word to use that doesn't seem
alpha
negative.
Mentality.
An alpha mentality. But I do think that with age and experience and a little bit of humbling, he's not going to be a problem in the locker room. At least I don't think.
I don't think so. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt for right now. He's got great energy and enthusiasm. That can be a really, really good thing. Tom in Nashville says Saros is going to be very soon in the $8 to $10 million range. Maybe more with cap growth. Don't see both in Nashville at the same time. I'm going to disagree with that, but the question will be if you're going to sign Saros to the next contract, what are we talking? Because there's a lot of argument right now of what a premier goalie is actually worth. If you pay too much, are you leaving too much for the rest of your team? Like, can you get him closer to 8 rather than 10? There's a huge difference between 8 and 10. I don't think 8's unrealistic at all. But 8,
10's deep.
It's also, think about it in these terms, percentage of your overall cap. The cap is going to go up. So $8 million in today's times is not the same as $8 million 3 years from now because the cap is going to be bigger.
Fair. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll continue to get into your thoughts on that. But coming up next, we're going to talk to David Haugh of 670 The Score in Chicago. Shout out to Ryan Porth. Because the absolute blank storm going on at Northwestern doesn't end with Pat Fitzgerald. And that is saying something. So we will chat with David Haugh coming up next. Caroline Willie D. Mays, 1025-1063 The Game.